All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Free For All. I'm your host, Big John, right here on Grumblings Media. You can catch this show and all of our shows at grumblingsmedia.com and on all the social platforms. Just type in at Grumblings Media, all one word, and we'll be more than happy to share our content with you. All right, tonight, a very special guest here for Free For All to chop up some liberty issues with me. I have Kate Fantino, who is otherwise known as Lady Liberty from Australia. You can catch her on Twitter. Let's put up your handle there so people know where to find you on Twitter. Follow Kate on Twitter. And let me give you a little background on Kate. Kate is an Australian political candidate and libertarian activist who ran as the lead Senate candidate for the Liberal Democrats in Western Australia. She's known for her advocacy of libertarian principles. She emphasizes the importance of less government and more personal freedom. Before her candidacy, Kate served as the national media and political liaison officer, and this is going to be a tongue twister, for the Sporting Shooters Association of Australia, or the SSAA. Her political platform focuses on decentralization and individual liberties, aiming to challenge what she perceives as excessive government control in Australia. Kate, did I get all that right?
You did. Thank you, Big John. And g'day to everybody watching. It's currently Friday morning in Australia, so I'm from the future. Bleak. The future is looking bleak if you like liberty. Sorry to bring the bad news to you.
Well, it's Thursday in America. So you're right. We are in some weird Star Trek warp here, those of us that have worked globally understand. But very interesting here that when I was reading your bio, you know, sometimes people get taken aback and they're like, she ran as a liberal Democrat and yet you're claiming she's some sort of libertarian chick? That doesn't register. But then again, let's take into consideration, folks, in America, those are bad words when they're put together. In Australia, the liberal Democrats were the libertarians. And now, in fact, you were telling me, Kate, they've officially changed their name to the Libertarian Party of Australia. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the name Liberal Democrats was meant to reflect a liberal democracy, which is what we were all about. Unfortunately, in Australia, we have a party called the Liberal Party of Australia, which is like your Republican Party. Mm. And they challenged us over the name because they thought they were losing votes to us with the name confusion. So we went through a costly court process to try and defend our founding name, but ended up changing it to Libertarian Party, which is what you guys are in Australia, in America. So I'm quite happy with that decision because that's what we are at the end of the day. So let's own it and let's educate people about what that actually means.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of people here in America forget that the word liberal was originally coined by the individual freedom lovers at the turn of the 20th century in America. That word got co-opted by what we now refer to as the progressives or the Democrats, that the word liberal. But the classic liberals, the Milton Friedman types, the von Mises and those guys, they considered themselves classical liberals before they were anarchists or something like that. So again, that word has migrated a lot. And also, Kate, just wanted to bring our other guest on. She's on the stage right now. Hey, everyone. Welcome Martha Bueno as well. So Martha was my second guest, a little bit delayed, but we're happy to have her here. Martha, welcome to the show. Nice seeing you again.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. And hey, Kate, nice to see you.
Hi, beautiful. I was telling Big John before that I got to meet you in America, and you're so beautiful. I'm excited to chat to you again. So much has been happening. We got Assange back.
Now, hopefully, our political prisoner, Ross Ulbricht, is also released. So, yay, one win for all of us. And also, you got married. Congratulations.
I did. I met my Australian husband at the Libertarian Party National Convention in DC. It was quite a wild ride. We were the only two Aussies there apart from Julian Assange's brother. And we ended up traveling together and got married in Vegas. So, yeah, it was quite the trip for me in America.
What's with all these Australian men getting swiped in libertarian circles, right? Like, what's going on, Martha? I hear...
You know, I have to say, this is hopefully more women will join the Libertarian Party, more men as well. Look, you never know what happens. You can even find yourself a husband or a wife.
So wait, Kate, you had to come to an America to marry an Aussie? Is that my understanding?
Yes.
We didn't know
each other before, but he had been following me and my political journey in Australia. I did work on the election in Victoria, where he's from, so he was aware of my activism. And then, it just happened. So I'm very grateful. And hello, Axel, who's watching. We're not living together yet. We want to move to America. So I've said to him, I'm not living with you until we move to America, so you got to make it happen.
Wow, that must be rough. But I'm sure... both your men are very happy, even if they have to wait with both of you. Is it something for women and Australian men? Do Australian men represent like the last bastion of masculinity in the world or something? Is that what's going on here, or is it just serendipity?
Well, I actually do a lot of work for firearm owners in Australia, and we're currently facing another gun confiscation scheme in Western Australia. And unfortunately, the leadership in the shooting organisations, which are predominantly men, are not showing leadership at all. They're cooperating with the state as part of the program. So there are some good men, like Australian men out there. Martha's got herself a good Tassie bloke. But I think it comes down to the individual and your choices and also your family and culture and also understanding history. And that's a big thing that Australians, we haven't had to fight for our freedoms like you guys did. We're still part of the Commonwealth. So we haven't had that uprising that you had for your individual liberties. And I think that's the point that it will have to get to in Australia for us to actually value liberty like you guys do.
Well, we used to value liberty. Martha will tell you... It's funny. I had the pleasure of interviewing Martha on my other show, The Big Questions. And Kate, I'll have to get you on for an extended interview as well. But Martha and I kind of have a shared history. Our family history is like running away from fascists and socialists and communists. So for first generation immigrants like ourselves, like I think we do appreciate that American ethos of having to fight for your liberties and how precious they are. I think like I'm pushing on 60. So, you know, my generation of firstborn immigrants is already fading in terms of, you know, like the folks that followed after me in my family, we're all born here. So they were born with liberty. They were, you know, they haven't known anything else. I know Martha was telling stories of her father being one step ahead of the socialists and the communists just about everywhere they went, you know, before they landed here. And
a step ahead. He was a political prisoner in Cuba.
He was a political prisoner. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
I do think that there, you know, I think Kate and I probably have the few Australian men who are fighters for liberty. Because, you know, I grew up with the stereotype of Crocodile Dundee being what I knew about Australia. And I just, you know, that scene where he's like, that's not a knife. This is enough. And I was like, wow, Australian dudes, they really, you know, like they can protect you and whatnot. They're going to wrestle an alligator, crocodile. And, you know, over COVID, I saw how, unfortunately, a lot of Australia didn't fight. They didn't fight back that repression, you know, from the state. And so it's and then I've really thought about it. And here in America, we're not really fighting back. We didn't fight back the COVID stuff either. And so, I mean, I think maybe it's just a matter of we don't remember, like you're saying, you know, the younger generations just don't remember. And some generations just haven't had to fight. Right now, there's a situation in Venezuela where over 2,000 people have been taken by the state. And they're having an election where their dictator apparently lost, but he's saying that he won anyways. And so people who are speaking out against the state are being taken. I know that Kate came with me to a Lola party while we were at the national convention. And one of the Lola girls, the chapter leader for Venezuela, for one of the states in Venezuela, was just recently taken, Maria Oropaz. So it's, you know, the situation is dire all around the world. And I think that it's just, it's such a sad time to be alive, where we have so much information, so easy to communicate amongst humans. And yet here we are, you know, like fighting tyranny, literally with people that, we are connected to. And we're trying to keep that flame alive and remind people, you don't give up your guns and fight when the state comes after you.
Yeah. Well, that is true, because and I'm always interested in a lot of things when we talk. So first of all, I'm always interested in people's journeys to the liberty movement, because I think most of us are not born into environments of liberty naturally. I mean, especially people of our generations and maybe a few younger generations, you know, like nobody really gets it. Plus I'd also like to compare cultures of liberty, like what we have here in the U.S. You know, you always read, hey, libertarianism in the U.S. is not the libertarianism of Europe, which is not the libertarianism of Australia or anywhere else in the world. So it's interesting to me to hear that. So let me ask you this. So Martha kind of shaped it, you know, like she's got a family history of dealing with tyrants, and whether they were socialists or communists. I kind of had that experience where my father, when I was 8 or 10, would say, you got to hate the communists, John, because, and I would say, why, Dad? You know, he goes, because in Greece, they were the only ones allowed to have guns, and they told us what to do. And I don't want anybody telling me what to do, you know? So I was raised with that, like, communism, fascism is bad. Don't let anybody take your guns. Don't let anybody take your liberty. Now, Kate, what I find interesting is that I've always had the image in my mind of Australians as being the rebels, you know, like they were the penal colony. They had to survive, you know, and against the wild. And, you know, you always had your, you know, like, oh, listen, when it comes to that, like, all I could think of Angus and Malcolm singing Jailbreak, you know, and like, wow, that's a libertarian tune in your head. You know, if you ever got one, shows you how old I am. But so why do I have the wrong perception of Australian culture in its relation to liberty? Or is the culture become more docile and accepting of the state and its limitations? What is that situation there?
Well, I come from a background of Italian immigrants. So my grandfather, my nonno, escaped fascist Italy. So I grew up with that understanding and that culture as well, that you should not be subservient to the state and protect your individual liberties at all cost. And then in Australia in 1996, when we had a big gun confiscation program and the new gun laws that John Howard introduced, I saw my father disarmed by the state, even though he was a peaceful person, a teacher, had never hurt anybody. So that memory was burnt into my brain from a young age, of the state coming and trampling on the civil liberties of my own family. Unfortunately, a lot of Australians don't seem to understand history or understand that the government is not your friend and not your protector. So we've had a culture in Australia that turns to the state for help. Every time there's a situation or an incident, at the moment there's a domestic violence crisis, people are turning to the state to save them. We do not have the practical legal ability to defend ourselves in Australia. We have no right to lethal or non-lethal self-defense. We cannot even use pepper spray. So the state has created a culture where Australians are forced to rely on them to save us, to protect us, which is why you saw during COVID, everyone complied. Everyone was looking to the state for money and to save them. And now, 4 years later, we are in a situation where we have less freedom, less individual liberty, and everyone's suffering. Inflation is through the roof. People are struggling to make ends meet. And they're turning to the state again to save them instead of realizing, hang on a second, it's gone too far. We should be in charge of our own history, our own future, and have the power to look after ourselves and our community. But unfortunately, because of since 1996, that's when our liberties were taken away, and it's just been downhill since then. So don't give up your guns. Never give up your guns. I'm so jealous of America for your Second Amendment and your Constitution that outlines individual liberties. Our Constitution, we have no rights in that document. during COVID, when I was in Western Australia, we had a right to travel between the states in our constitution. The High Court found that in a state of emergency, we don't even have that right. So I could not travel to see my family for 2.5 years. That's how far Australia has fallen. We are not a free country. There is an illusion of freedom. But people, we haven't got to that point yet that we want to fight for our freedoms. And that's what it's going to come down to. If I feel like coming back to Australia after 2 months in your beautiful country, that Australia is on its way to becoming Argentina before Javier Milei. That's how it honestly feels. And it breaks my heart for my country.
Yeah. And would you, that's a very interesting sort of wrap up that you gave. I have to ask though, did Australians come to this point because there's something culturally about them that says, hey, we got to be sort of subservient to our government? Was it anything practical that happened? Is it a sort of like seduction through socialism that took place there? Like, I'm not really familiar of the culture there. Like, what would lead Australians to be like, look, I don't want to pin this on just Australians, Martha, and I will tell you, here in America, there's plenty of people who are willing to have a nanny state and trade in their rights to be taken care of or to be made felt secure. But like, is there something in the Australian ethos that says like, yeah, we, you know, not to sound too comical, but is it because you are a Commonwealth? There is a crown somewhere that's supposed to take care of you. Is that sort of like the thought process, or is it just, hey, things just grew out of control and people want to be taken care of, want to be protected?
There's also an element that Australians are very laid back. Mark can probably tell you that. We're just very easygoing, she'll be right, mate, kind of culture. So we kind of let things get too far. We also have a system of government that I call an oligarchy. All the money stays at the top. 60% of people are employed by state governments or federal governments in Australia. Right. So they're reliant on the state to keep their jobs, so they continue to vote for these governments. Everyone has a piece of the pie, and they don't realise that you've traded individual liberties and the freedom of your families just to have a paycheck. But I don't blame people for that. I mean, we're all struggling. Of course you don't want to give up your government right. job when people can't buy food, but it's going to have to get to the point where you realize you've traded too much and the state has too much power and nobody's happy here. That's the other thing I've noticed since coming back to Australia. Everyone is miserable. So I really feel bad for my country, and that's why I want to migrate to America, because at least you have the constitution that protects your individual rights. We have nothing here. And unless there's going to be some kind of fight for freedoms like you guys had, I can't see it changing, and I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
You know, I am going to what you were saying, John. Just, I don't think that anybody is born with this idea of liberty. I think that, for example, Kate, I know that you've always been a liberty person, but coming to America, I think, maybe kind of instilled it even more so, right? Like, you can directly compare what you were living in Australia with what you saw in America. And I think, you know, for me, I think that's the reason why I too feel this liberty. It is because I grew up in Venezuela. It is because I see what is happening there that I can compare, my life to the life of, for example, my family back in Cuba. I can, you know, I can compare. I am able to work. And because of that work, I'm able to maybe afford the things that I can afford and still send money back to Cuba versus people in Cuba that can't. So I don't think it's anything with Australians necessarily, the same way it's nothing with Americans. The reason Americans had that fight is because everybody who came to America was an immigrant from somewhere else where their family or where they themselves were being treated in a fashion that was not freedom, that they didn't have the freedoms to worship. The main reason to move to America, you know, early America, was because they didn't have freedom to worship. So, you know, when you see that people escape those things and then come here, that's where you realize it's not it's not an American virtue. It's not Americans aren't necessarily more free because of just the way we are. I think it's because of where we came from. And unfortunately, because that history is so far removed from Americans, most Americans today don't care for that freedom. I posted yesterday, I think, on Twitter, a clip where Kamala Harris, the vice president and running for president of the United States, says that she wants mandatory buyback of guns. And the amount of people that are like, that's my woman. I mean, she's so great. Number one, buyback means that the government at some point owned these things. There's no buyback. These are mine. You don't just get to buy them back. But on top of that, mandatory? So they're going to take our guns. And a lot of people just are like, she didn't really mean that. You know, no.
Well, that's also, Martha, literally the nonsense of that buyback program is it is literally the case of being executed and then your family having to pay for the bullets, because the buyback program that the government forces on you is funded by the taxes they steal from you to begin with. So they're not buying back anything.
Right? Buy your guns with the money that they robbed from you. And then if you don't comply, they're going to use your gun to kill you. So, I mean, it's just a wonderful all-around system for the government where we get screwed on every single side of it. So I didn't mean to step in on Kate's answer on what makes Australians not merely freedom. I the more I see this happen in different places, the more I think it's a human condition. We want to be taken care of. We want to believe that that daddy government cares about us. I mean, because if they don't, then they've been lying to us, and nobody likes finding out that they're the fool, right? And right now, we're all the fool.
And that there's no Santa Claus. Before we continue, I just want to encourage everyone, leave your questions in the comment sections, whether you're watching us on YouTube, Rumble, or Facebook Live. If you're on X, you're a little bit out of luck because Elon refuses to open up his API to our streaming software. But if you're on the other ones, feel free. And we actually have a couple of questions. Let me pop those up right now. Life of Agony. Martha Bueno is absolutely beautiful. Does she happen to be single? No, we covered that already.
I mean, thank you. I'll let my Australian husband know so that, you know.
Yeah, he needs to keep an eye out is what needs to happen. Life of Agony may be somewhere where you are. I'm not sure. But see what happens when you dress up the studio with something other than this face? Good things happen for numbers. I'll tell you that much. But just to continue on. But Martha and Kate, I think your points are well taken. But something that concerns me even more, to build on what Martha was saying, and Kate, you got to watch out. And maybe when you come here, is it's not just the Second Amendment that Americans are starting to turn their back on. Kamala Harris saying she wants to confiscate guns. But when you go to the college campuses, when you poll young people in this country, most of them don't even believe in the First Amendment anymore. Most of them think that you don't have the right to offend someone with speech, even. They want to have restrictions on the First Amendment for hurt feelings, for, quote, misinformation, which plays into the whole COVID regime thing. And look, part of free speech is you're going to get a lot of nonsense. There's going to be a lot of noise with the signal buried somewhere in the middle, right? So part of it is that as libertarians, I think, is we have to admit that just because everyone gets the right to yell something doesn't mean that what you hear isn't nonsense, right? You have to be able to filter it out. But I think it's just that the alternative is much worse, meaning having a central authority regulating your rights, whether it's the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, whatever it is. And most people forget the amendment, the Bill of Rights that says you can't have soldiers quartered in your homes. I mean, but it just goes to show you that even back then, at times when Continental Army could shack up in your spare bedroom because they had nowhere else to stay, right? That we thought it was important enough to say, yeah, none of that will happen. Even during wartime, those soldiers can be, you know, and it just, to your point, ladies, goes to say what we have going here in the U.S. Very good. Okay. Now, let me also ask in this case, like, to Kate, how does the libertarianism in Australia, as nascent as it is, as growing as it may be right now, how does that differ from what you saw when you were here in the U.S. at the National Convention or even at Pork Fest? Like, how do you contrast and compare the liberty movements in Australia and the U.S.?
So I came into the Libertarian Party in Australia because I followed Senator Ron Paul, Senator David Leinhelm. He was the first Libertarian senator elected in 2013 as a Liberal Democrat at the time. And I had the pleasure of working for him. I was working for the SSAA, which is like your NRA at the time. And that's how I came to understand what Libertarian was, through guns, through gun rights. So I worked for him for quite some time before moving to Western Australia, working for the Libertarian in that parliament across to Victoria, and helped with that campaign and the Libertarians there. But unfortunately, during that time, from Senator Leinhelm to now, we have lost representation. The party, I feel, has been infiltrated by ex-conservatives who are taking over the party and using it as a vehicle for their own self-interest, which is why I'm no longer a member anymore. I was actually, my Western Australian Senate campaign, where I received 2% of the vote and nearly got elected because of our preference system, I was kicked out of the party after that because of my pro-gun campaign that I ran. So the Libertarian Party in Australia is not pro-gun. It was under Senator David Leinhelm, but they have since stepped away from that completely. They are not even advocating for firearms to be used for self-defence anymore. So it's unfortunate to see the party is not sticking to the values of libertarianism. And that's why in America, I was so glad to see that at least there are still people in your party that appreciate those principles. And I know the candidates that you've got for presidential and vice presidential nominee has caused a bit of friction. But in Australia, we haven't even got that left libertarian vote at all. They're all voting communist. So for me, I would feel if we had a left-leaning candidate like Chase, he would be a good salesman in Australia to capture that vote, the youth vote that turned to communism instead of realising that we are the ones with the answers. So it was quite interesting to see how the party operates over there. I met some amazing people like Martha. It was a highlight for me. And you guys have some big names progressing liberty outside of just a political party. That's the other thing I've noticed in Australia is influencers like myself, there's not very many of us because everyone's putting all their efforts into the political fight instead of realizing that you have to change culture as well. I'm doing some work with comedians in that space, so I'm looking outside of just the politics, and I feel like my energy is better spent there because the political fight in Australia, we're not winning that at all.
That's sad to hear. But I was going to say, Martha, I'm sorry, I was going to say, she mentions infiltration of the party by conservatives and stuff.
You're saying what we are experiencing here. And I think that because I, too, stepped away from the Libertarian Party of the United States, even though that's where we met, because those are still my friends and those are still my people. I just don't agree with a lot of the stuff anymore. But I think what you're experiencing in Australia, we experienced here. And I have this weird idea that it's not necessarily the party itself. You know, I think that we were infiltrated here too. And even things like Bitcoin get infiltrated and hijacked. And so I think honestly that there's a bigger issue here. And I don't want to go down any weird rabbit holes, especially not with Bitcoin. But, you know, I think that if it was so easy, if we could just prop up a party, elect somebody, and then we now are this free United States, that we would have done that a long time ago. And the reason in the United States we have a strong Republican and a Democrat party and no other third party for the last 180 years is because there's a stronghold. And you can't just create another party and vote that person in and kumbaya, everything's going to be lovely. The people who control it are not going to let you control it. And in 2016, the Libertarian Party in the United States had a presidential candidate, Gary Johnson, that came very, very, very close to making some waves. He actually got 4.6% of the vote, which is the highest a third party has gotten since Ross Perot. And Ross Perot didn't have a party, it was just a person. So right. He made history. And what happened after that? Well, the Libertarian Party was infiltrated. We started tearing each other down. We started like really ripping ourselves to shreds. And now we have nothing. And I doubt that even though Chase is a wonderful person and he's a wonderful candidate, and I'm sure that in any normal circumstance, voting for the Libertarian is still better than voting for the evil in either side. he's not going to get even 1% of the vote. That is my prediction. Yeah. So you're just, I think it's time that we do what exactly you just mentioned. Let's go out there and change the culture. Because honestly, we're not going to change politics by infiltrating politics and doing the same thing we've done for the last 180 years without any change.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a big diatribe just to say.
No. That's what we're here for, is rants and diatribes. I love them. It's funny because there was a comment and both of you kind of touched on it organically, which was, Linda says, what do you think of Chase Oliver as your presidential nominee? It seems like a controversial pick with so much party infighting. Yeah, Linda, it is. And it shouldn't be. That's the crime of it all. It shouldn't be.
I've been a libertarian long enough where before libertarians were like, it doesn't matter who the party nominee is, or it shouldn't matter, because ultimately we all agree on these fundamental things. And that is that your liberty, your individual liberty, comes above everything else. And so, one of the things that I see with Chase is, he complied to the COVID mandates. Okay. Because for whatever his own personal reasons, but he didn't force it upon anyone else. And he never said, hey, you should do what I'm doing. He was just complying for himself. And so I don't have a problem with that. I think Chase is a wonderful human being. Unfortunately for me in this election, I'm not voting for Chase at the moment because I committed my vote to another candidate to free my political prisoner. So it's an exchange that I did. I'm not saying other people have to. I would love to see Ross free. And so if anybody wants to join me on this, that's what I'm doing. But Chase is a great person. I like him. I hate that we came to this, but we're just not going to win anyway. So I do believe now that it is a wasted vote, pretty much. Voting in general just doesn't do anything for us.
Right. Yeah. It, to be honest with you, I've been hearing a lot of that from a lot of name people. I had Larry Sharp on a couple of weeks ago, and it broke my heart because Larry's a great guy. Both of us are native New Yorkers, grew up in the same neighborhoods, that sort of thing. We're both Bronx kids, And to hear him just say, Big John, I'm just about ready to move. And he always told me, the day you see me move out of New York is the day I've given up on liberty. That was what he told me early on, because he's so committed to making sure that his state gets freer, even if it's a little bit freer than it was yesterday. And to see him defeated, this whole infighting, this whole you're not quite libertarian enough unless you're like a radical anarchist, which was interesting. Kate, that's one of the things I wanted to ask, like the libertarianism that does exist in Australia, how would you describe it? Would you describe it as ANCAPs, anarchists? Would you describe it as minarchists, classical liberals? In the United States, we'd have a category, say, constitutionalists. But you get my meaning. Like, where along that spectrum would you say most of Australian libertarianism sits?
It's more incrementalism here. So the party doesn't go for big things like get rid of tax. They go for less tax, smaller government, messaging like that. Whereas I'm identified more as, stick to your guns, stick to your principles, self-defense, you should be able to use a firearms. They're advocating for pepper spray. So I understand that you have to move the Overton window. And to do that, they're trying to use politics when they've completely forgotten about having the conversation on the ground in the trenches, as I call it. So I understand the strategy behind those kind of things. They were very outspoken on the COVID lockdowns, which I was very proud to see. They came out and John Ruddick, who's the elected Libertarian in New South Wales, was the first to call for the lockdowns to end, and that was in March. So it was very early on that, saying this is an overreach of government. But they go for incremental wins rather than trying to educate people about what Libertarian actually is and how it can actually save you. So that's what I liked about the Libertarian Party in America, that you are sticking to your guns. And Chase, his anti-war stance is fantastic. He's the only candidate that I've seen in this race that has the best message on that. And it's such a shame to see all the other noise and all the criticism from his own people just wipes out that message completely. So you've got to get behind the people that are out there trying to advocate for you. You can have your own opinions, but the infighting, the division, that's why people get turned off of politics. I mean, after my election campaign and I was kicked out of the party, we lost all those volunteers that had dedicated time, money to fight because they believed in me and the principles. So you've just lost all those people that you've spent years working to get on your team. It's just a shame that we seem to, it's like herding cats, herding libertarians. We just can't collectivize. It's not in our nature. And that's why we'll never win politically. That's why we have to have the culture fight instead.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those sort of, I'm sorry, Martha, I was going to say, it reminds me of the androids in all those Star Trek movies. You know, like you give them a logical paradox and their heads explode. Literally, they would have the, like, listen to me, I always lie. Why, if you are lying, you cannot be telling me that you're a liar, and then the android's head explodes, you know? And I think a lot of libertarians, when you put them in groups, it's always been my case that politically it seems like counterintuitive to have a libertarian party, because by definition, I would hope, we're all individualists. We all put the individual above the state. We put the individual above the collective. We put the individual, like, to the extent that some libertarians are like the minarchists or the classical liberals, you could put them together in a group and they could advocate for smaller government, less government, and all that. But like the big L libertarian to me seems counterintuitive, because it almost seems like you can't herd those cats. And of course, whenever you get 10 libertarians in a room, you get 12 opinions about what is a libertarian, right? So when you put all that together, it seems that politically we're like hamsters on a treadmill constantly. And that's why a lot of people are like, well, the elections don't matter if you're the LP to that extent. It should just be the opportunity to get on the ballot and speak to people, be able to preach to people, debate others, let the ideas sort of create this wave. And I think we've kind of lost that recently. With Gary Johnson, we were certainly talking about it a little bit more, with Joe to some extent. But we have had this thing where now I think libertarians are at it again. You're not a real libertarian unless you're an anarchist. You're not a real libertarian unless you're an ANCAP. If you don't think Murray Rothbard is God, you're not a real libertarian. I'm old enough.
We literally attacked Joe Jorgensen during the campaign, and now we're attacking Chase Oliver. And I think it just goes back to what I was saying. I mean, I think that the Overton window is moving, Kate, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Big John. The Overton window is moving. If you look, and I don't know about your TikTok or your Instagram or your whatever in Australia, but here, most people are homesteading. They're doing, or not most people, but like big influencers here are homesteading. They're buying land in the middle of nowhere. They're growing their own crops or growing their own animals. They're living off grid and they're creating communities. And I think that that's the key, honestly, to winning. We're never going to win by trying to herd the cats, like we keep saying, and get everybody in line. And we all have to agree that this is how we're going to live our lives. No, that's like literally not going to do anything for us. And so I think there's a big silver lining here. We're going back to nature. We're learning to live off the land. And we're creating these communities where freedom actually does live. And I think that that is what we need to be doing. Forget about politics. That's why I retired from politics. I too, like you, Kate, like I feel like we've gone through the same journey half a world away. You're literally 12 hours, like you're ahead, your next day, exactly the same time, but the next day for me. And we're living these parallel lives where we discovered the Libertarian Party. We're like, oh my God, there's freedom. Let's go. Let's fight for this. And then you're an activist and you're doing all these things. And then you're like, no, not to run for office because that's how I'm going to win. And then we run for office. We do a good race. We lose anyways. And then we're like, wait a minute. This is not advancing freedom. How do we advance freedom? And I think the answer to that is you build a community and you also outbreed the left. So you're newly married. I mean, this is where our parallels stop. I have four kids, four children. We outbreed the left. We create our own communities. We teach our children about freedom and we create a community. We need to get you in America. Let's go. Let's create a freedom community of people that just love it. All over America, because if Australia isn't that place, then welcome to America.
I actually wanted to show you guys something, which I found interesting. Let me put this up on the screen. So there was this graph by the Federal Election Commission sources and the University of Florida. The yellow part of this chart are the people who did not vote in U.S. presidential elections. And since 1976, the people who didn't vote far outnumbered the people who voted for either party.
Mm-hmm. So I like literally, how they excluded Gary Johnson as if that blimp on the radar, you know, right. Almost 5 whole points didn't go anywhere. But anyways, yeah. Excluding yeah. that part.
Yeah, yes. they had Perot in as a third party, but that, you know, but the bigger point is that this is the equivalent of our NOTA vote that we have in the Libertarian Party, right? Is the gold piece here. And so while I agree with you, Martha and Kate, about politics perhaps not being the primary mover for liberty, I happen to think there is an opportunity where that gold piece, if nothing else, can delegitimize the blue and the red and delegitimize whatever they think they're trying to impose on us. To the extent that, you know, even in 2020, where basically the vote was split a third all the way across between Republican, between Trump, Biden, and leave me alone, I'm not voting for either of these two octogenarians, right? So there is where that gold vote to me can either be held out as a, we'll vote for one of the other two parties if they give us what they want. Martha, you said, for example, I'm guessing that you might vote for the guy who is saying he might free Ross.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I happen to think he wouldn't know the truth if he tripped over it, but you know, whatever, right? But at least you have.
With what I've got.
Yeah, no. I understand your thought process there. But let me hear from you two. Like, do you think, okay, we can't take over politically. Can we influence politically, though? Can we influence, like, look, for years, Ron Paul, the god of libertarians under the age of 40 in the U.S., he was in Congress as a Republican for all those years. He made his bones in the Republican Party because back then, I guess the Republicans would say libertarians could infiltrate the Republican Party and pull it more towards the smaller government branch, even with Reagan, bring it back.
We have people like Massey and we have people like Eric Brakey and we have, I mean, listen, there's good people. Even though I consider most of them lizard people, I think that there are good people. It's like, you know, some people in politics are good. I think the problem that you were alluding to, that percentage that doesn't vote, if our vote was counted as not voting, then we'd have a majority. The problem is who's going to write that law and who's going to pass it? And it just alludes to an even bigger problem that we have, not just here, but everywhere in the world, which is why does our government not actually serve us? And why do we keep electing them? I mean, we all know this. It's not like I've said this many times, and I may have even have said it to you before, Big John. You know, if you go to a doctor and the doctor cuts off the wrong leg, you needed an amputation, you needed the right leg amputated, but he amputates the left. You'd make it your business to tell everybody and their mother, never go to that doctor. He did a bad job. He, I don't know, let somebody die. He didn't give him medicine. He gave him the right. Wrong medicine. He amputated the wrong leg. But in politics, it's the only career you can do where you literally can screw up from top to bottom and bottom to top, and you can stand there and be like, and I'm going to do this, and then you do the complete opposite, and people will still elect you because you're my guy. So, you know, it's our own fault, realistically. We're not holding them accountable. And then, you know, they don't work for us. In America, we send money all over the world. You know where we don't send money? To our own communities. We're talking about putting tampons in boys' bathrooms in high schools. For God's sake, the girls' rooms don't have tampons. Like, it's just mind-numbing how dumb we are where we keep electing these same people. And we're like, no, it's totally cool. So I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know what it's going to take to change this. But I just can't imagine that somebody's going to write a bill and everybody's going to vote yes. If you don't vote, that counts as a nolo vote or a nota or something. I mean, come on. That would take something incredibly large. Am I wrong, Kate?
Go ahead, Kate. Let me hear your thoughts on it.
Well, it's interesting. In Australia, we have mandatory voting. So we have to vote. We don't have the choice. You can go in and people draw interesting pictures on the ballot. I'll let you, your imagination think what they draw. But the problem with mandatory voting that I've seen in Australia is people just vote for those one-line slogans that the Greens Party, which is the Communist Party of Australia, free mental health, free dental, free university education. So the young people are seeing that when they're walking in to vote and going, oh, yes, free, 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 because the political conversations and the culture work that the libertarians haven't done, we haven't educated people about what free actually means. It's taxpayer funded. You are going to pay for that, or the next generation is going to pay for that. Think of the bigger picture. So the fact that you guys have the opportunity to not even participate, I'm very jealous, because in Australia, if we had that opportunity, we wouldn't have uneducated people making such important decisions about who's running our country. And that's the other message I try to communicate, is government affects every aspect of your daily life. The price of fuel, the price of food, the price of beer. It's $18 for a pint of beer here in Australia. I was outraged when I came back. They've banned vaping. We can only buy cigarettes, which are taxed at 70%. That is all government decisions which control your life. But people in Australia still don't seem to understand that until it actually affects them and their families. And then they look for an answer and they see people, government, promising more free things and more support. And so we're caught in this trap of voting for people who promise us the most free stuff. And then we wonder why inflation is through the roof and why we can't afford anything and why our children are suffering at school because they're learning all this kind of crazy stuff. So at least you have the option to not vote.
Yeah, that is a blessing, I guess. But
we also have people that have no business voting and that also vote to continue to get more free stuff, because that's ultimately who's going to the polls in the largest number. It's not the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezos and the, you know, like the most industrious people. It's they literally pack buses and drive people in to vote. I mean, you cannot have a government that is giving free things and people can vote for those free things for themselves somehow get smaller. It's just, it's never going to work. It's never worked. The only reason America was America at the beginning is because we had such a limited government at the beginning, and our founding fathers wanted it to stay that way. But politicians found a way to work around it. We now see, like, even political president, you know, people that are running for president, they're like, and I will do an executive order for blah, 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 if I can't get it through the House. That's literally the point. You're supposed to be able to get it through the House and the Senate. And if you can't, then you don't get it. You're supposed to use your words and your convincing. And we the system is broken. And I used to come on these shows and be like, can we get fixed it? And lately, I'm just like, burn it to the ground. I don't know what to do anymore. You know, I don't know.
Oh, man.
I understand the frustration, and having a lot of years on both you ladies, it's cyclical. You see it. Like this was the feeling in the malaise of the 70s, you know, in the U.S. It was the same thing. What are we doing? Nobody can change anything. No vote matters. You know, I remember William F. Buckley running for mayor of New York. And he was gaining some traction with his ultra-conservative views, right? Some of them libertarian in nature, like he was for decriminalization of drugs back in the early 70s. And one of the reporters famously asked him, he goes, Mr. Buckley, say you win the race for mayor, what would be your first act? And he very blithely said, demand a recount. Because he knew that nobody would vote for him. And if by some chance he won, it was shenanigans, right? So he was just fighting to change an individual's daily perception of what was happening in society. Like, I tell people, hey, I don't know politically if libertarianism will work, but in your daily life, in my daily life, I try to live as a libertarian, right? Like, I'm straight edge, no drugs or alcohol for me, my choice. I would never, ever tell anyone not to do either. You know, do what you want. Just leave me alone. That is my first and only, leave me alone and I'll leave you alone. That's That's the agreement I have with all my neighbors. I couldn't tell. I've been living here for 20 years. I couldn't tell you the names of either neighbor to either side of me. I keep to myself. I don't bother anybody. I am really just, you know, but that's how I choose to live my life. And I think if we got more people to just adapt, not to be a hermit like myself, but like just to, I'm not going to bother you. You don't bother me. That's the agreement we live by. You know, wherever possible, trade, don't purchase anything so you don't pay taxes, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe that's the way that if the law doesn't catch up to us, at least we could change this, the small part of society that we participate in.
I just so, want to say that you brought up the early 70s.
Yeah.
50 years ago. And you were talking about drugs being illegal. It's been 50 years plus, way more than that. And they're still illegal. What am I trying to say? Look how, like, yes, maybe people over time had, like, more excitement and, like, yay, we're going to change things. But it's only gotten worse. And we still have the same problems. Like, we've had the illegal drugs, the war on drugs, for well over 50 years. And we haven't figured out that prohibition doesn't work. And still, we steal from you, me, all of us, to pay to put people in jail, feed them three meals a day because they dared to take a drug and potentially hurt themselves. So we're just going to hurt them more by taking their freedom, taking them from their families, taking their livelihoods, taking their money, their homes, everything, their ability to produce, and throwing them in a cage because they may potentially hurt themselves with the drug. And we haven't learned that lesson. And so it is frustrating. And maybe a cycle will come around, there will be a new moon and kumbaya, and we're all going to be like, yay, this political person's going to save our lives. And I see it now. I mean, I know I'm voting for Trump, but that doesn't mean that I necessarily like him or anything. I just, you know, again, I would really like to free my political prisoner. And I see these people, like, I see how people are just so enamored and so in love, and this guy is going to save us, and if we don't vote for him, it's the end of our republic, and it's the end of days. And I'm like, whoa, I don't know what to say to that, because that is a lot of love to a politician.
Yeah. Kate, I hope we're not putting you off from still wanting to move to America, are we? I mean, that wasn't the intention here, Kate.
No, well, I was going to say, you were talking about communities and Porkfest, New Hampshire, the Free State Project. That was so incredible to see. I've been following that story for quite some time. And it's sad because Australia, we don't have any free states. All their governments are terrible. It's not like you can easily move somewhere and you're suddenly freer. I mean, there is slight differences between states. I left Western Australia because of their new gun laws, which would see me stripped of owning firearms because I wouldn't pass their social credit score that they put out, where they can take away my guns based on my views, attitudes and opinions and what I post on social media. So I had to get out of that state. But community, and like Martha was saying, all the homesteading and being in New Hampshire at Porkfest and seeing those communities in real life and meeting all these people that are living outside of the system, basically, and not looking to a president to save them, looking after their own families and their own futures in their own communities. That's what I really loved about America. And I would move to somewhere like that, or Texas as well. I really love Texas, and the culture there reminded me a lot of Australia. So there is hope for America, at least. We don't have those opportunities like you do here.
Yeah, and it is... You know, I've always said it's interesting because when you hear people in Europe, they're always like, oh, we got to go. You know, if you're in England, oh, we got to go visit Spain. We got to go. Nobody leaves America. And part of my theory is that if you stay in America, we have, you know, 48 contiguous states. Like, you could take a vacation and be in a different world if you go from New York to Miami to Texas to California. You could. It's like four different worlds. You might as well be at the furthest reaches of the world. Both in terms of the physical landscape, the weather, and also just it really is a 50-state laboratory like it was intended to be. People would have those choices, right? I always say, no matter how miserable it gets in New York, I'm a native-born New Yorker. I'm still one of those old guys. Like, you know, until Martha, you made me feel very old by reminding me that the 70s were 50 years ago. I was okay with it. but...
me, you know, I'm sorry.
but you know what happened was, people don't believe me when I say this, as bad as New York City is today, it is 100 times better than it was in the 70s. Because if you grew up in the 70s, there were, you know, like junkies at your feet. You took your life in your hands. I remember I was 10 years old going to school, and I was packed with a blackjack, a 007 knife. You know, you had to physically protect yourself. It was a war zone. And even going back then to now, you're like, I would never leave New York because I was born here. I think it classic New Yorkers have a certain attitude to them, which, by the way, everybody else hates. But to the point that you could go elsewhere and enjoy, like, do we think that literally just conducting yourself in a libertarian manner and surrounding yourself like the Free State Project, I don't know if I care for them or not, but I understand the concept of it, or going to Texas where people are fleeing to Texas now from California, New York, some of the bigger blue states are fleeing to Texas for lesser restrictions, more gun rights, things of that nature.
Florida.
What was that?
We get the New Yorkers here in Florida.
Oh, yeah. Well, the old joke was Florida, Miami is the Jewish suburb of Manhattan, right? Because you had all the retirees that would go down to Florida.
Don't New York my Florida.
Sixth borough is Florida, right? for New York.
Wholeheartedly rejected that. And when New Yorkers move in, we're like, please don't New York my Florida.
You mean they run around and they don't demand their bagels with a smear and their regular coffees and all that fun stuff and their thin sliced pizzas?
No, that's the fun part. We just don't want them to vote for communists. And I think that's the thing about Miami is, and I don't know if Kate, you've had a chance to come down to Miami, but Miami is, I call it the capital of Latin America. And the reason for that is in Miami, we have the most amount of immigrants coming from countries that have communism or very heavy-handed socialism. Miami has over 1 million Cubans. We have hundred thousands of Venezuelans. We have Nicaraguans. We have people who have come from places all over the world who are fleeing those type of societies. So, you know, I think that when New Yorkers come here, we make them feel at home, but we also, I think, are very, very, very adamant that we are not going to be socialist. So hopefully we can keep it that way and we get to participate in that 50 state difference for a long time to come. I hope we get to keep it freer, than other states like New York.
Okay. And we're getting some comments. We have a 3-part comment. So I'll try to get through it from our friend Starchild, who's on the X platform. So this is being relayed through my producer. So, Starchild. Martha perfectly elucidates how, unlike a doctor who amputates the wrong leg, politicians who screw everything up can make promises and be like, vote for me, and people still buy it. Yet she's planning to vote for Trump because of a promise? Is her head in danger of exploding? And I think this one is the same. Yeah, so the other two were broken up.
So... I've come, as you've seen from this conversation, I feel like voting at this point is useless. I've felt this way for a while. This isn't something new, but, you know, I had the belief during COVID, I volunteered my time. I was sitting at home and I volunteered my time for the Joe Jorgensen Spike Cohen campaign. I traveled the country. I translated everything Joe and Spike did into Spanish with my good friend, Zach Foster. And we did everything we could with $0 budget, and we got Joe Jorgensen 5% more Hispanic votes than Gary Johnson did in 2016, despite the fact that Gary Johnson spoke Spanish and Joe Jorgensen and Spike Cohen did not. So we really did a lot of work and we got it. And that was the day of the debate, the very first presidential debate. Joe Jorgensen, of course, was not invited to that debate. And we went to, it was in Cincinnati, Ohio. We, a group of the people that were volunteering on our campaign, we stayed at a home together. And we were, you know, getting ready to go out to the protest to, you know, let her speak and let her into the debate and whatnot. And that day, for whatever reason, because it was COVID, because people were locked in their house, because people were anxious to find out what was going on in the world, Jo Jorgensen started to surge in Google searches, and her name just started exploding until, boop, cut off completely. Her name just fell from the Google search. Every one of the hashtags on X, well, at the time it was Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, were removed altogether all at once. She was completely censored. Everybody on her team was censored. And that moment, I realized it doesn't matter what we do. There is a secret hand, a deep state, and whatever you want to call it, that will not allow a candidate that is not one of the other two to get ahead. It just is not going to happen. So is my head exploding? Absolutely. But also, my vote is worthless. If not for the voting for Trump to free Ross, I would not be voting. I would be part of that 40%+ that every year, every election year just doesn't go out anymore. I'm sick and tired of doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over, because now I've been voting for 24 years and nothing has ever been accomplished. And so, yeah, you know what? Star Child, I love Star Child. Star Child is a wonderful activist in his own right. You know, you're right. I wish that I didn't have to. I wish that there wasn't a man in jail right now for starting a website in this country, in the country that I believe is the freest country in the world. And yet we do the things that we did to Julian Assange. We held a man for telling the truth about what our government was doing in a cage in a foreign country that he had to hide in an embassy for what, 10 years, 8 years? Right. I mean, we've done some horrible things, but Ross Ulbricht is sitting in a cage for 240 years is a sentence. And the reason he is there is because he built a website. And furthermore, the judge, Catherine Forrest, at sentencing said that she was sentencing Ross for his beliefs. And what are Ross's beliefs? His beliefs are my beliefs. I am Ross. Ross was a libertarian. He was a Ron Paul. He was part of the Ron Paul revolution. He was part of Students for Liberty. This kid was raised super libertarian and believed in the things that I believe in. And I can't let Ross just sit in a cage. So I will go ahead and do the thing that I don't even believe in. I will give Trump this vote. I will do the thing because Trump said twice now, once at the Libertarian Convention, once at Bitcoin, and all of the people that are around Trump, I've asked them, and I will be posting those videos shortly, people like Tulsi Gabbard, people like Vivek Ramaswamy, they're all saying Trump said he's going to do it and he's going to do it. So that is why I'm voting. I'm going to hold him to that. I have a lot of proof that Trump said he would do it, and therefore I'm very hopeful that he will do it. But I agree with you, Star Child. I mean, ultimately, does it matter if our ruler is Kamala or if it's Trump? We still have a ruler. So yes, long way of saying it's disgusting, and I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, and for folks that don't know, Star Child is the party. He's the chair of the San Francisco, the Libertarian Party of San Francisco. And he was actually beat up at the Libertarian National Convention by security for his appearance, and physically removed and rousted, which was a crying shame. So thanks for your questions, Star Child. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Cool person. Hey. Who is just super sweet and
yeah.
Deserved that. And yeah, what a shame that happened at our convention.
And you know what? Plug for me. Go to Big Questions with Big John. I did a full 2.5-hour interview with Star Child. Get to know him. He's a really sweet man, really dedicated to principles of liberty. So, yeah, go check it out. Kate, does Martha's nihilism here, is it putting you off to liberty in America? I fully understand what Martha is saying. I don't know if it's just me. I don't know if it's just my outlook in life. I almost refuse in the face of reality. You know, she mentioned doing the same thing over and over for 24 years, not seeing any results. Einstein himself said that is the very definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. So maybe I'm the insane one. Maybe I think something will change if I just conduct myself properly. How do you see it? Like you already said, hey, and to that point, I saw a comment. Let me here. Why aren't Linda Vizia says, why aren't libertarians focusing on local elections where they can make a bigger difference and have an easier opportunity to get elected here in the U.S. talking about things like school boards and state assemblies and things like that, something local that they can get elected. And by the way, the perception is that libertarians aren't getting elected anywhere, which is far from the truth. On the local level, there are several states that have significant, if not majority, numbers of libertarians winning local elections. So that is happening to a local level. It's just that the national needle isn't moving that much. So, Kate, talk to me a little bit about what Martha was talking about. Like, you said you're kind of done with politics. Do you feel like you mentioned working with comedians in Australia, which I love, by the way. I'm a big fan of comedy in general. Do you feel that that's the proper way of reaching? And to me, the key is reaching the youth, right? Like the Ron Paul revolution. But, you know, I think some of the Ron Paul revolution has also morphed into, you know, like the earth is flat and we never went to the moon type people. And that kind of is self-defeating as well, even though certainly they have the right to say whatever's on their mind. So how do you kind of see it moving forward? You're someone who maybe comes to America, picks up the banner from Martha and myself and a lot of other good people who are just tired and giving up. If you take the ball and run, how are you going to score that touchdown for libertarians?
Well, I like the point about getting involved in your local community. That's something I'm very passionate about. My local community just happens to be the shooters and the gun clubs. So that's where I'm taking my fight to at the moment, trying to be the voice for them because they're terrified of the government. They're having their guns confiscated at the moment in Western Australia, so I'm trying to give them hope. But I was fortunate to spend some time in Colorado with Forest Mummy and to see the work that she does in her local community. She is so passionate about looking at the tyranny in your own backyard before you even turn your minds to all the deep state stuff that happens at a federal level. So that was quite inspiring and a message that I really took home, as well as from New Hampshire, the amount of local activism that goes on there. That's where it starts. It starts in your own communities before you can change big picture stuff. But my plan and my hope is to move to America, and then Australians might actually start to listen, because there's a culture here of tool poppy syndrome and not listening to people unless you could prove to succeed elsewhere. I do have quite a following, which is quite large for an Australian libertarian activist, but it's not enough. And I want to do everything I can to make more people listen and to get the message out there. And like Martha said, we have censorship in Australia. We've just passed a law that the authorities can change what you've posted on social media, so they can actually go in and not just remove it, but alter what you've said. So we don't even have free speech in Australia anymore. We have big censorship. You might have seen the case against Elon Musk that our e-safety commissioner brought against him to remove the vision of the Bondi stabbing and the stabbing of that holy man in Sydney. I mean, they're trying to take away every opportunity we have to talk about what we believe in. So I feel the same despair that Martha does. And it's even worse in Australia because we don't have your constitution. And that's what I always come back to at the end of the day. At least you have a piece of paper that was written by your founding fathers that you can hold up in court and fight for. That's what your gun organizations do. Gun organizations roll over in bed with the government and get whatever money they can out of them. Whereas your gun organizations, not the NRA and definitely not the SSAA that I used to work for, there's no fight anymore. People are just falling in line, taking whatever money they can get out of the government and not caring about future generations. And that's something I'm concerned about. The next generation, Martha's kids, my kids one day, what world are we going to leave them if we don't stand up and fight? So you have to put your fight and your energy to fights where you can change people's minds and educate them. We're not doing that in Australia at all, or there's not enough of us. It's all about the political fight, which I feel is also a wasted effort here. So I'm hopeful that I'll inspire more people to get involved through comedy. That's where you change the culture, predates politics. So get out there. And I've had lots of conversations with comedians that have brought more of the anti-government thing into their acts. And that's how we start getting people to change minds, not with political campaigns that people don't listen to until the day they vote anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm hopeful, though. I'm hopeful with people like Martha, Forrest Mummy, your show, Larry Sharp, Spike Cohen, all these inspirational Americans who are Dave Smith. I was so impressed by his speech before Trump. That's how we change people's minds. And I really want to try and get people in Australia, influencers that can do what you guys are doing in America as well. But you have to lead by example, and it's a lonely battle down here.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Martha.
How do you get the influencers in Australia if they're censoring the social media apps and such? Like, it must be such a big challenge. Do you have any insight on how we could break that barrier? Is it like an Elon Musk type of, decensor X there? Or what can we do from America to help you with that? How can we push it? Do you guys see our content?
We do see your content, so X has just been a blessing, even though our government's trying to control that as well. But it's also about getting out into the community, having the face-to-face conversations. Like, we've lost the art of conversation. I mean, just having a chat to someone at the pub, like, you don't have to go full Spurg on them and start quoting, Rothbard or all those people. It's just having the conversation, like, what matters to you, what's affecting you, and then planting the seed. Oh, well, did you know that beer you're drinking is because the government taxes 60% of it? Oh, really? I thought it was the pub being greedy. So really that grassroots activism and town hall meetings, face-to-face, which people are craving after COVID. I mean, we didn't get to see our families. 2.5 years I didn't get to see my family because they locked me behind the border in WA. So just getting out there and talking to people is how it starts.
Right. Well, and that's why I think it's so important, because, a lot of libertarians, especially nowadays, they tend to gravitate towards what seems to be the more explosive issues, pro-guns, which absolutely they should be. And the Fed, which, again, fully agree with. But to me, the most prominent thing is always free speech. To me, it's always been. I remember when I, growing up, I hate to admit to this, I was a conservative. I wasn't a libertarian. I was a conservative. I was a William F. Buckley, Barry Goldwater conservative, small government. But what turned me away from it was the way I saw the conservatives suppress speech. Because as crazy as it sounds today, 50 years ago, as Martha reminded me, when I was a child, it was the conservatives who would stifle free speech. No, things couldn't have pornography in it. You couldn't talk about subversive issues. It's funny that Gary Gygax, the inventor of Dungeons and Dragons, when he died, his FBI file surfaced, and in it said Gygax, an agitator and known libertarian. Like, that was in his FBI file, a known libertarian, so that is what people and governments fear the most. What did the old fascists and communists, what was the first thing they did when they conquered a country? They controlled the radio stations. They controlled the TV stations. That was ahead of gun confiscation. Why? You had to control speech. You had to control thought. We see it in the UK, people getting arrested for Facebook posts, not taken down, not altered, as in Australia, which is bad enough, by the way, Kate. I have enough trouble convincing people of what I'm actually saying, let alone what I'm saying after somebody's changed it or something like that. In the UK, you see these horrible, video clips of family members being taken away for something they posted on Facebook, something they posted on X. Jail time, actual jail time. And it worries me that here in the U.S., where we do have a First Amendment, we start to see free speech being clawed away at, trying to work towards, misgendering being a crime, hate speech, whatever that's defined as the moment, being criminalized. And that worries me, because unfortunately the youth of America today doesn't believe in a strong First Amendment when it comes to speech. They believe in you should be nice. You shouldn't offend anybody. Use the proper language. Things like that. Certain words should be banned. And to me, that's an anathema, more so than the gun issue right now or the end the Fed issue. Because while I certainly agree with those positions wholeheartedly, for me to even understand those positions, we need free speech. We need to have free speech. So So I wish you luck, Kate, in gathering your Australian influencers, the comedians, which I've always felt is the best way to communicate is through comedy, stand-up comedy, to be able to do that. So good luck with that. All right. We're getting towards the end of the show, so I want to give you ladies an opportunity. First of all, I want to say thank you for joining the show. It was a great conversation. Let me put up your handles, and I'll start with Martha. Martha, any last words and or promos for you?
No promos. It's so great. I'm so grateful to have met you at the Libertarian Convention and to be joining people like you in this fight. I think that that's what we're here for. We're here to share the fight. It was definitely, I wouldn't have gotten the opportunity to really get to know you and talk to you at conference like Cohen and his lovely wife, the better Cohen, Tasha. And so I think that sometimes things just happen. We need to build their communities, and this is an example of it. Find the people and build those communities and find the freedom that you can in your neck of the woods. So, keep doing what everyone's doing. Keep pushing for freedom. So, thank you.
Thanks.
For having me.
Thanks. Thanks, Martha, and we're going to be happy that you joined us and say you're always welcome to come back to the show. We love having you. And we get guys who keep wondering if you're single, so that's always a good that's always good for ratings. You know what I'm saying about that. All right. Kate, please let me put up your X handle. We want to get your socials out there so you can start to influence some things in Australia before you come to.
Thank you, and thanks, Big John. And I was so excited to share this platform with Martha. She's a bloody inspiration. I was so happy to meet her in America. Can't wait to see you in Australia at the end of the year or early next year. You'll have to come across to Perth or wherever I am at the time. And my plan is to get back to America by mid-next year so I can join the fight there on the ground. And one day come back and save Australia when they've realized that we need liberty to be happy.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Martha. For everybody else out there, you've been watching Free For All here at Grumblings Media. Go to grumblingsmedia.com. Any social platform, just search for at Grumblings Media. Join us next Thursday when I'll have I'll have interesting guests as well, but probably not as attractive as the two guests we've had tonight. So thank you, everyone, for joining. And this is, until next time, this is Big John. Peace out, everyone.